We're just here to observe and judge your every move. Just kidding. But we are.
And not to worry. We'll measure our justice with mercy. On the Amy Berkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Welcome aboard our loosey-goosey summer hours continue, our special Tuesday edition, August 5th, but won't be so special for long. Details to follow. Free Flow Pop Culture Convo, frenemy and foe alike will learn some of the new words entered into the official Scrabble dictionary. I wonder if that applies to words with friends, too. We'll talk. And speaking of words, the man who coined the phrase rock and roll has just been kicked out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, sort of. Details coming up. Also, of course, inspiration to action shout-outs as time permits. And you on the line, if you're listening live, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. Busy Twitter feed today at A.B. Wright in anticipation of our guest, one of our fan favorites, Dr. Daniela Schreier, joins us in a moment. The show today brought to you in part by Netflix, now streaming today's entertainment, and by Kellogg's Raisin Bran. Invest in your heart health today. So Dr. Daniela is back to take on a slew of justice stories with us. Dr. Daniela, as you know, is a noted psychologist who often comments on justice issues as well as lifestyle and social topics on many outlets, including this one. And it's always too long between visits, but we're always happy to have you here, Dr. Daniela. Thank you so much for joining us again.
It's such a pleasure to be with you and our listeners.
Absolutely. We've got lots of tweets and emails in anticipation of your visit. Can't get to all the topics. I just want to say that out front to all the folks, but we'll try to do as many as we can. And we want to start with what has become the summer soap opera, I guess, in Washington, D.C. and beyond, this crazy tabloid trial of former Governor Bob McDonnell of Virginia and his wife, Maureen, on charges, a slew of corruption charges, stemming from their relationship and accepting a bounty of lavish gifts from wealthy businessman Johnny Williams. Government contends in exchange for favor to his businesses. He's got health care or health supplement business. They're denying it, of course, and they have an interesting defense. But what is curious to me up front is they had a deal, a plea deal on the table, which would have allowed Maureen to take a complete walk and have the former governor plead guilty to one felony, maybe do a short stint in jail or even more likely get probation. They're rolling the dice, though, and instead face a slew of charges and perhaps, probably unlikely, but who knows, decades behind bars. Of course, when you say perhaps, you know, you have to think about your former governor in Illinois, Rob Blagojevich, who took that roll of the dice when he tried to sell President Obama's vacant Senate seat and kept fighting because he claimed he didn't really benefit from it, which always made me laugh because that's sort of akin to a bank robber stealing the money, getting arrested on the street and saying, well, I didn't get to spend it yet. I mean, you know, you didn't get to benefit from it, but you still committed the offense. So where do you think this – talk about the hubris behind this not taking the deal and rolling the dice.
Well, you know what? It's very interesting. First of all, I'm really feeling sorry for Bob McDonnell. I mean, I covered the Blagojevich case, and I'm also feeling sorry for Blagojevich because he really, at the end of the day, got a heavy sentence for things that are very commonly happening in Illinois and were not prosecuted that to that amount before. But
sure.
The issue here is what both of them have in common, they are politicians. And you are so correct. Their baseline for tolerance, right, of taking a gamble is so much higher, Amy, than that of a general normal person who works an 8-to-5 job. This is why I call these people very often, and I say that very loosely, white-collar psychopaths, right, or sociopaths. Mm. It's kind of they are able to set the stakes real high. I was reading that, too. It's like in the case of Blagojevich, who could have taken the deal and probably would have done a couple of years and would have come out. But no, it's like I am not acknowledging any responsibility. Or maybe it is also, you know, the hope that is always there that I can wiggle myself out of this thing.
Right.
You know, I did it before, why not now? And I think it has a little bit to do with the choice of profession, correct? How are people?
Yeah.
They are very extrovert. They are outgoing. Generally, what normally you probably would hide somewhere in a hole. Sorry to say that you wouldn't want to be seen by anyone. Blagojevich still went out. He loved to talk to people to defend himself. And so funny that there is a bumper sticker out, and it says Blagojevich for governor in 2016 or something like that. There's no people out there rooting for him. But I think these are characteristics that are sometimes there for politicians. It's a high-stake game. Not everyone goes into it. And you know what? Probably they say to themselves, what do I have to lose, number one? And number two, maybe they're not used to losing.
Ah, yes. Well, of course, there is a certain level of arrogance that all politicians have to have, obviously, to believe they can do the job
strength.
And get out there. And maybe it's also a little delusional, you know, that they think, like you said, I'm not going to lose this. I can't lose this. It worked for John Edwards. Of course, I don't think they gave him such a great plea deal to begin with. And he, of course, you know, his wife had died and he had young children to take care of, and maybe he figured he had to go for it. And also that case was a little murkier because it was campaign finance fraud. They couldn't figure, one of the main witnesses had passed away. It was a little convoluted, so the jury really had to come back with a not guilty. This, to me, I don't know, and maybe they will get out of it, but it just seems like there's so much evidence against them. Their defense, which is interesting too, is it was a schoolgirl crush on the part of Mrs. McDonald. This is where I guess you're feeling sorry for Bob McDonald. Their marriage was in tatters, they claim. They don't admit to an affair. She didn't have an affair with this guy, Johnny Williams, but she had a crush on him, and she was missed at her husband because he didn't spend enough time with her, and she just enjoyed the attention, and that's why she wanted to go on these lavish shopping sprees. It wasn't the stuff that she cared about so much. She just liked to be with this guy. Now, this, to me, is a trumped-up defense that I'm not sure is going to play with an average jury, but who knows?
Well, you know, there's a lot of grandiosity there from both sides. And I think it's like that. Money is the root of all evil. Generally, when people taste a little bit of it and the luxury that they can have, at times they become addicted to it. And then they do anything that is necessary to keep up the lifestyle or to get that dress, that Ferrari, and that watch. I do think, you know, when you enter into the court system, it's an adversarial system. So basically what they want is, well, we want to find mitigating factors, anything that could kind of reduce the punishment that we're having. I think it is an entirely ridiculous story. But the fact is, this is America, and we have the right here and liberty for people, if they have the money to hire a lawyer, to present what they think could be a good defense and their side of the story. And I feel that's, or think, not feel, what's going on here. For me, it is very annoying because, you know what, if a person would work at a company and take all of this, or maybe bribes or all of these gifts, and this is a private company, that person would already be prosecuted and would be behind bars, would never go back in her job as a CPA or whatever she or he did before, and it would be done. But the fact is here, these people at this point have more access, have better lawyers, so they are running around free for much longer.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, of course, the whole thing was they, as you said, got addicted to a lifestyle that they really couldn't afford, which is some of the stories we're not going to get into today because we don't have that much time, like some of these reality show stars who are in trouble where they're pretending
it's
they
abuse.
Have a life that they really haven't earned.
It's abuse of power. I'm so sorry. What I'm meaning was that very often when people shift up, right, in social status, people will come all the time to offer you special deals, etc. But there's also an ethics piece here. When you are accepting to be governor, and I'm not judging, we are all human, people make mistakes, but listen, you're taking a position, you're a governor, you're also supposed to be a role model. And that is what is disturbing me here. People, you know, go out, they want to run for political office, and for me, their private behavior and also their spending behaviors, all this is very important for me because this is what they bring in the office. And the times before they behave fairly decently, and the moment they have access to power, obviously their character all of a sudden is displaced. You can't find it anymore. And that's kind of what's going on here. Also now, I said I'm feeling sorry for Mr. McDonald. Seems to be a very nice man. But you know what? Charming, glib, and superficial. These are always also hallmarks of people who are, you know, sociopaths in the financial area. We have that. And you cannot say, Amy, even if I would just be a friend of yours and I say, here's your Rolex and here's your Ferrari, if I'm giving that to you and you know I have $0 in my account, wouldn't you ask me, hey, honey, you're a good friend, where did you get that money from? Please.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like the ordinary citizen is not stupid.
Well, we'll see. Let's see if they how it plays out with the jury. It certainly was a shocking defense when they launched it. I don't think the media certainly nobody was expecting it when we saw what they came up with. So we'll see how we'll see how it goes. And sometimes the jury, like I was joking with somebody the other day, said, "Well, it's not in Florida, so I don't know what they're hoping for," because you know all those cases in Florida where people were getting away with things. They take, like you said, people have a right to a defense, and they can mount any story they so choose, and we'll see what happens. But they took that big gamble, and that's what I think is just so intriguing to me. Obviously, they don't want to do any time in jail. But you also think, I mean, maybe their marriage really is in tatters because he's letting her now hang with him, possibly, whereas before she would have been able to walk free, according to the original plea deal. So we'll see how that one plays out.
Very interesting last point, too, because I think two of their daughters had to testify. But I do think it's very easy to put all the blame on him and saying, well, he should have taken the fall. It's not always the guy who is out for
right.
the nice things. So she might have well had her part in it. She might have wanted to have all these dresses and nice things, et cetera. And sometimes we as women can nag a lot and push a lot, and we always say that the man is the hand, but the woman is the neck that moves everything. So maybe for him it was important to say, no, you're not getting off, even especially if the marriage is not good.
Yeah.
I'm not taking the fall for that because you participated. We really don't know.
Well, no, I actually agree with you on what you just said before. I think she did fuel it because I think she did want all those things, and I think that was the impetus. I think you're so right about that. But I'm just saying if their marriage was in better shape, he might have been more inclined to take the fall, but he might actually be angry with her. And I think also he has a little bit, as we mentioned earlier, of a delusional sense that he can actually come back from this and maybe reclaim his political future, which at one point there was some talk about him running for president. I don't think that's going to happen now. But
this is America. It wouldn't surprise anyone. I'm teasing at this point. I love our country. It's not that I meant that disrespectfully. But, yes, it is all of these people. Normally people would hide. They would never even want to be seen in public again. But you see so many politicians that fell from grace based on monetary situations that they are instigated or sexual scandals. All of them want to come back to politics because that's the game in town that they want to play.
Right. Well, it worked for Mark Sanford.
He
got back. Former governor of South Carolina. He's in Congress now. So sometimes he can have a comeback. I know Anthony Weiner tried it, but then he went back to his old ways. But yeah, interesting. So what about when you get on the world stage? I know one of your favorite characters is Vladimir Putin and his great political power grab. And I remember, 10 years ago when former President George Bush looked into Putin's eyes and saw that he had a good soul. Things have really changed, both with his relationship to this country and to the world. What is going on with him? How do you analyze this character?
Well, very respectfully, former President Bush must have looked in the eyes of his wife, thinking that he looked into Putin's eyes. Actually, it's very interesting. You know, I grew up in Western Germany next to the Iron Curtain, so I'm very familiar with Eastern Europe or the former KGB, actually, mindset, right? So Putin, in my opinion, you know, is very consistent in his behavior patterns. Past behavior is indicative of future behavior, and Putin is nothing but an ex-KGB. This is a religion more than a mindset. It's a fixed system of principles and beliefs. It's about dominance. It's how to exert it, how to kind of advance the influence of your territory. That means Mother Russia, and nothing else is important, and this is the game that he plays. In my opinion, he's the most consistent player on the international stage, other than Netanyahu, but I'm a fan of Netanyahu in a very different way because I think he's a very brilliant statesman. I'm not saying that Putin is that, and I just made a comparison, but Putin is very consistent. He shows his colors all the time, and I always think, how do you treat a bully? He's a bully, okay? Mm. The fact is, you know, don't threaten the bully if you're not ready to come down on him, because this will just strengthen him. And in his own country at this point, he has more support than ever, and we have to look at it. Again, for him, he is very glib, superficial. He can come across as very manly for some people and charming. My mom always refers to his half-nude pictures and said, please, this old piece of man, why is he doing that, right? She's living much closer to it. It's like, no one wants to see this. It's not attractive. But he's very well built. He's taking care of himself. So it is very interesting. He has all these traits that many of the politicians have, too. And for many people, and I am not on Putin's side, please, the opposite, but he asserts confidence or manliness or, you know what, he will step in Germany, you say, over dead bodies in order to achieve what he wants.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the danger lies with him, in my opinion.
Yeah. And he was waiting it out to sort of take over again, because he was out of office for a while, then he got back in, and he seems to be more assertive than ever. And some people, of course, on the conservative end of things politically here will say that that's because President Obama is weak. I would disagree with that, but I think he was just sort of waiting it out and looking about the whole all the conditions in the world and Europe too, because of course he's closer to Europe, and Europe is more affected by a lot of things that go on in the Soviet Union, or the former Soviet Union, which I think he wants to reestablish the Soviet Union from Russia, it seems like.
Yeah, I think he wants to. As a matter of fact, I don't think that he was ever dormant. We always talk about the Russian bear. I think he was always very active, because Belarus and other former territories of Mother Russia have unofficially been, and Georgia, have officially been taken back by him. It was just very underhanded. It was not very loud. He didn't make a lot of publicity around it. See, there's one thing. He has a project that is kind of called the Eurasia Project that would be the counterpart to the European nation or the European trade agreements. He wants Ukraine to be part of that. He doesn't want Ukraine to be part of the rest of the European, maybe, nations or trade agreements.
Right.
Because Ukraine, for him, is very important. It's, as we call it, the corn chamber of Europe. There, it's his access route to the rest of the European countries, as a matter of fact. It's full of natural resources, etc., okay? And he wants to, basically, again, have the forced marriage that was taking place in many times, in many years ago, between Mother Russia and Ukraine. And the problem is now that it's on the world scene, and so people see it, that he's actually trying to force the bride to come back home with him. That's the only difference. But, you know, as I said, it's very difficult, even for the rest of the European countries, basically, to say no to him, because he has such a high stake of investments in all of these other countries, yeah.
Right. So there's a level of intimidation. Well, what do you attribute psychologically to his maneuvers closer to the Olympics, the last Olympics when he started with his anti-gay campaign? It seemed to be he was like thumbing his nose at the world and saying, I'm going to do what I want to do. I mean, all this stuff sort of came out. It seemed like it came out of nowhere. Probably didn't come out of nowhere. He was probably like that all the time in his own country. But he was being very vocal about that, and you know, there was some talk about boycotting it and all of that. I mean, what was that? What is that psychological profile of somebody who does that?
Well, I would just say it's very interesting, because later maybe we are going to talk about Stirling, right? It's kind of someone who's frozen in time. But remember, I told you, we're talking about times with the KGB, right? Back then, yes, a gay and lesbian individuals were in the closet. They were not allowed to come out. And I think for him, this is a threat to his manliness. Does that make sense? This is more about him, his, like, gender bias or his sexual orientation bias. It speaks not to the gay and lesbian community. They have done nothing wrong. They are who they are. That's totally fine. It speaks about him. Probably this is something improper for him. It is threatening his worldview. This is where things like that come from. And I think for him it is important to say, probably, oh, in Russia we don't have any gay and lesbian populations. We are still pure as before. You know, he's basically the poster child of the macho man, correct? That's what he wants to be. And anything that is different is threatening to him. But remember, interesting, during the Olympics, he really tried to shape everything up, to have complete control over things. He tried to diminish or really avoid terrorist attacks. And we know if anything would have happened, he would have come down hard on them. Interesting piece.
Very interesting. I've got to ask you about this police brutality as we talk about the abuse of power, because a lot of people have been tweeting about this case. I don't know. Are you familiar with the Eric Garner case, very big case here in the New York City area? This man who was on the street a couple of weeks ago ostensibly selling loose cigarettes, which I think would not even be a misdemeanor. It would be a violation worthy of getting a ticket. And I guess if you accrue enough of them, you might go to jail for a few days or pay a fine, that kind of thing. And he was taken down and in a illegal chokehold, killed by four policemen. I mean, essentially, he was killed. It was just ruled on Friday a homicide, officially, by the medical examiner. And it was caught on videotape by a citizen who was standing around, took the videotape and released it to the media. And this is why it's infuriating people. Interestingly enough, the guy who took the video was just arrested on Sunday following this medical examiner report for carrying an illegal firearm. We're not sure if it's his family, of course, is claiming he was a trumped-up charge. I would say it's kind of irrelevant, though, because the video, unless he's doctored the video speaks for itself. You see the police attacking him, and I think a lot of questions have come through, and links on Twitter kind of sums it up by saying, is there a groupthink that goes on? Because we had four policemen involved, and you would think police, and I want to say this right up front, most police, by and large, do the right thing. They're well-intentioned, and you don't hear about it because they're doing their job. You hear about the aberrations, like that case out in California when the policeman beat that woman who was walking in the middle of the highway. He pulled her in and claimed that she was a menace because she was in the highway, but he pulled her off, and he was banging her head on the ground. I'm sure you've seen that video. It went viral. After he arrested her, he certainly could have put her in handcuffs and put her in the back of the patrol car to take to the station or the hospital if she needed evaluation without hitting her on the head. That did no good. But that was a single cop. Here we have four police officers. And so far, they haven't been charged yet. The charges are pending. There's an investigation. I think only one of them, which I thought was interesting and kind of shocking, was reassigned to desk duty. The others, I think, are still on regular duty, and I think that's strange. But what about the groupthink? This is the question that a lot of people have. Is there a mentality and a sense of abuse of power, adrenaline that can kick in with one person, but nobody of that group could stand up and say, wait a minute, let's defuse the situation, which is what they're supposedly trained to do?
Well, I want to step back for a second and say that it's very interesting for me. First of all, I'm very sad that a person lost his life. And it's interesting for me that we always hear only about cases of police brutality, but we never hear about the many cases where police officers are killed every day here in Chicago, in New York, in the line of duty. I do think I have many friends who are married or dating police officers, firemen, etc., and every morning this man, generally, or women, leave their houses. The partner doesn't know if they come back the next day or the same night. And I do think that, so I'm not defending the violence or a potential groupthink, okay, but the fact is these people are exposed to a lot of stress. Have you ever imagined to go out and work in the streets or on the streets of New York? I'm not sure when they encountered this man with the cigarettes and what was going on. Yes, there can be a moment of an abuse of power or, you know, it's just distress going on and people step over the line. That happens sometimes in the military, right? Four or five come together, and what happens? One is brutally abused by all of them together. It is true that as people, when, for example, we have three or four people there, or there's 50 people even watching, we have also the bystander effect, that people are watching and think, well, the other person should call the police. Why should I do that? You know? And it's definitely easier to be drawn into the fact if two of your colleagues already, you know, hold him down, that you also give a blow here. But we also don't know the story that is actually tying into that. Did this, and I'm not saying that happened, but did they pick up this guy before? Had they told him, that is not a justification for what happened, had they told him many times not to be around there? Or was he just, you know, at the wrong place at the wrong time, and people or one person started to let off steam, and the others didn't stop him? But I think we have to really put it in a perspective of what those jobs are demanding from people. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of PTSD, post-traumatic stress. Many of our police officers come home and have nightmares every day, every night. Many of them self-medicating with actually alcohol because in the circles, psychology is, if you're not part of the team, it's not necessarily looked on as helpful because you have to go back on the streets. And what happens, I think very often, the symptoms can also be turned around, and then there comes out aggression at the wrong point and towards the wrong person, and I think that's what's going on sometimes. And my last thought, see, it takes a special person to go into this profession. Some of them go really into it because they have this idea of have a high moral and also they have a high capacity for distress. Where everyone else would run away, they're supposedly standing still and put their lives at the line. But we have also some people joining who kind of are very hungry for power. And when you're carrying a weapon, you have a lot of power. Does that make sense? And so sometimes things get out of hand. And we have heard it very often. But I think we should not forget, especially in Chicago, how many police officers wanted to do the right thing. They're in their 20s and 30s. They leave a wife and three or four kids behind. And they're just killed by some people on the street without any reason, gang fights, et cetera. And that's the other
thing. And I think I said that initially. I agree with you that the vast majority of these people are in it for the right reasons and do the right thing. But it just, unfortunately, we hear about the aberrations more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be dealt with. And this was a really egregious case. I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out, but it was egregious. And I'm glad they caught it on video. Otherwise, they probably would have been able to cover it up. And as it is, now they're trying to cast aspersions on the guy that took the video and then discounting what he saw. I mean, you know, it's hard to deny the video if you see that video.
Yeah.
First of all, a chokehold is illegal. So I don't know, the guy who did the chokehold, I guess, is the one who's on desk duty, but he should really be completely suspended, and I suspect one or more of them will be prosecuted. I mean, I just can't see it as something that they can just pass up. It was a really heinous offense, regardless of whether this guy was a nuisance in the neighborhood, which
doesn't
I guess
matter,
they're contending that he was, you know. Because you see, he's a big guy, no question, but I don't even think a suspected murderer deserves the treatment they gave this guy. And he was not resisting, at least according to what we saw. Now, I guess I'm sure they're going to cook up a defense. As you said earlier, anybody can come up with whatever story they're going to purport and say that something happened before, and maybe it did, and we'll see how it goes. But it's really hard to refute that video, that's for sure.
Also,
now, you mentioned...
Go ahead.
Yeah, no,
sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, that's one thing,
ahead,
too. See, very often we say, well, there was no resistance from the person. And that's not a defense for the police officers, not at all. But you know what? What if 9 times before you sought to do the right thing and the person tried to shoot at you, to escape, tried to hurt you, tried to kill you? Sometimes it's the 10th person that could be taken down, you know, peacefully. Then that's where people snap. So that's the problem. We are human. We have breaking points. And obviously here people were at a breaking point. And sometimes violence is generated by post-traumatic syndrome of stress or having been attacked one time too many or having been on duty for too long. These are all not excuses. These officers need to be definitely evaluated, need to be prosecuted. Serious change has to happen. But we have to look also at why is this happening? Is it just random or it's based on the stresses that they occur? Do they need a different treatment? Do they need to work less? Do they need more police officers, as a matter of fact, rather than less? Yeah.
And less, exactly. And just the idea of that groupthink, which I think a few people have mentioned, that, you know, too bad there wasn't one person in that group that would have been able to defuse the situation, may have helped it, maybe not. Maybe it would have been too late. I don't know. That one, of course, we'll continue to evaluate. I just had to ask that because a lot of people have been tweeting an email about that particular case.
Look, you feel maybe that you're 4 people, 5 people. You normally would die for this person that you're working with. That's what's happening here, right?
Right.
They're like in a war zone every day. If your partner is getting attacked, you can get very angry about that because this is your survival system. And often, yes, remember, people go to the soccer field or here in America to any other football game. We know that maybe this is a person that is normally not violent, but there are 3-4 people around him, and then he chimes in and beating someone up, and they say it's very atypical. Why would he do that? Yep. It is easier to do it in a group because then we don't take personal responsibility. The other person started it.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I do appreciate your thoughtful analysis on that because it is a very volatile issue and it's not one that's going to go away for quite a while, it looks like. Now, we were going to talk about Donald Sterling, the L.A. Clippers owner who we all know about his shenanigans with the young V. Is that the woman? I forget her name now. V. Steviano, that's it. And, of course, his wife or his estranged wife petitioned to be able to take over on the basis of that he was incompetent to sell the team. He's fighting it. The judge ruled that she could sell the team. She was within her rights. He's balking at the $2 billion to get out of the Clippers. He wants to hang on to it. Is it wanting to hang on to the team, wanting to hang on, like you said, maybe freeze-framed in his earlier glory, or is he really incompetent? What is your take on him?
Well, number one, obviously he has a racial problem, and he has that for a long time, and that's his problem. Okay, this is not new because it happened before and it was out there. Unfortunately, we can't force or beat people into submission to love everyone else or to accept that other people, if they look differently, have different sexual orientations, etc., are equal. Okay? So the fact is, what happens, this man is quite powerful and dominant. He made a lot of money for himself. He has never been beaten down before. He has a lot of ego arrogance. What happened is that he feels wronged, and I tell you why. Yes, he made this demeaning remarks, horrible remarks, unacceptable for me. But you know what? He also made them in the privacy of a conversation with someone that he dated, a woman that knew about his attitudes towards people of color. She's a woman of color but still dated him and took his money. I'm not blaming her, but this is the interesting twist in the story.
Oh, it is.
And
she, yes.
And she fried him then, you know. But in fact, honey, maybe you should have also thought before, if he's speaking about you and your people that way, that's not a good man to associate with. No judgment. You know what? In life, we do many things, and love is magical, or money can be. So for whatever reason.
She loved the money, I think, and the condo and the cars and all of that. Yeah, right.
And maybe there's an attraction too. We never know what's going on between two people. And maybe she also separated herself from, he doesn't like people who look like me, but he also tells me that I can pass as, whatever he told her, as a white girl or whatever. Doesn't matter. I think the problem here is that he feels wronged because his personal conversation in his living room, even though it's an awful conversation, was made public. Also, his medical records were made public, and that's a no-no. So he just fights for not losing face, F-A-C-E, face. That's what we say in Singapore. That's the worst thing. That's his affront. Yeah. He doesn't want to lose that. He doesn't want to step down. It's not about the money for him because he could care less. It's about what he thinks. It's his reputation. And we already think, well, honey, it's damaged. Go away.
You don't have it.
But
yeah.
No.
Right.
No.
But he's clinging to it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying he's clinging to that reputation that doesn't really exist, but he thinks it should exist or wishes it still existed. Yeah.
But also, see, I think there's a couple of things to be said. He is right when he says that it is his personal right to make statements in the privacy of his home. You know, don't make it on the phone. He has that right.
I agree with that.
He has, in America, he even has the right to be a racist. This is how free our country is. The problem is you cannot say it publicly, and especially not if you're working in an industry that is really dominated by people of color who are extremely good at the game or in management, because it's not only the game they're good at. They can manage teams. They can even buy teams. So it's like these are your equals. Yeah. But I do think he feels violated. And remember, if you're pushing someone, I taught a lot of diversity classes, and I also participated in a lot. The one that I felt personally were not very productive for students and for participants or even teachers, where things were forced. You can't force someone to say, I have prejudice about everyone, but now it's reversed. I know everyone is equal. People have to believe that. And I think he is so powerful and so rich that he never had to bow down like many of us have, right, to taking a job that you don't like, eating something up, right, and apologizing for something rather than saying, and I don't think he sees anything wrong with what he did, and that's the huge issue.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, still, having two neurologists examine him or neuropsychologists examine him and putting the test reports online or the results out there, that's not right either. You know, one wrong doesn't make a right, or two rights don't make a wrong, or the other way around,
two wrongs don't make a right.
Yes, thank you very
Sometimes
much.
Sometimes two rights don't make a wrong either. That's very interesting, and I think that's a very generous, and you're right on about it, I think. You're right that he is someone who has been violated, even though he said some horrific things and believed some horrific things. He does have certain rights that were kind of trampled on. But do you believe or you don't even care about whether, do you think he is competent? I guess that's the question. Do you think he really can make the decisions for himself, or do you think not?
I do think he can. And I have never assessed him. I tell you this. I have never assessed him.
Course.
But until now, he had no power revoked. He did run his own business, obviously. He was successfully running whatever he does. Isn't he a real estate magnate? So there was no report that he wouldn't run his companies anymore. How is that coming up now? That's my problem.
Right.
And what is the neurological issue? It means, has he developed Alzheimer's or something like that? And that doesn't come overnight. How is he no longer competent all of a sudden? That doesn't happen from one day to the next. He didn't have a car accident. Yes, maybe he's not 50 anymore, but there are many successful people in their 70s or 90s who run their own show. So I am not sure where that came from.
All right. That's an interesting concept. On the other end of the competency issue, just came out the other day also that in the horrific Slender Man stabbing case in Wisconsin, the two 12-year-old girls who are accused and apparently did stab one of their classmates to pay tribute to this fictional internet character Slender Man, has been deemed incompetent. And I think the psychiatrist who evaluated her said, for now, meaning, and I think the comment was she has to grow up, which led me to believe, and we did a whole show on this right after it happened, this idea of trying these kids, as horrific as these crimes are, as adults, because we've learned so much more. I mean, you were probably living in West Germany back in the 70s and 80s, and I don't know what it's like in Europe, but in this country, I mean, back then there was like a juvenile justice system that was really for juveniles. They still have it, but they try a lot of kids, especially for these egregious crimes, as adults. And back then, we didn't know as much as we know about the development of the human brain. I mean, you're not fully developed, certainly at 12. I mean, so I think it's kind of harsh to try them as an adult. Anyway, they've got to pay some kind of consequence, clearly, but what is your take on that? I'm just curious.
A couple of things. Well, we have laws here, and in the Court of Law of Wisconsin, it's required that anyone age 10 or older to be charged as adult in severe crimes. And we are actually dealing with a severe crime.
Well, yeah.
The problem here is you're correct that our prefrontal cortex or prefrontal lobe, that's the center for impulse control, for reasoning and really straightforward thinking, is not fully developed at age 12. It still kicks in at the ages of 21, 22, 23. Some people now say it's still developing well into our 30s, okay? So, yes, that is all true. But there's two things. When you're 12 years old, your concept of life and death is not reversible. That means you know if you're going to kill someone, that person will be dead forever. You're not 4 or 5 when you're thinking, oh, I'm taking this little gun and shoot the person, and then like on TV, they come back. Also, this crime was premeditated. That means it was pre-planned and pre-arranged. It was even postponed because I think they wanted to do it a week earlier or a couple of weeks earlier and couldn't. So then they set out probably that week. They even told the victim to be quiet and to lay down so she would lose blood slower and she would die and be quiet. There's a problem here for me. Many children, all children, don't have a frontal loop or cortex that is online or fully developed. But most children don't go out attempting to kill other children. Now, I agree with you. Probably it would be nice to be tried in juvenile court, because the fact is, should a person have a chance for redemption? Yes, especially in the case where the victim survived. We forget very often about the victim and what she's going through for the rest of her life. Horrendous attack, post-traumatic stress, breach of trust by two good friends. So now, when I was working in jail, I saw it very often for adults that they were declared mentally incompetent, and that's always for a certain period of time, Amy. For in her case, it's now she's also, if it's adult, she's 1 year, as a matter of fact. So the judge says, okay, we're sending her for mental health treatment here in the Chicago area before. I think they sent them to Elgin, and they try to restore the mental competency. If you're not competent, basically you cannot contribute to your trial, you cannot contribute to the facts, you cannot understand fully what's going on. And in her case, there is such a thing, because when you're talking to a 12-year-old, it's not as if you would be talking to a 36-year-old who fully comprehends the consequences of what happened. She neither has the education nor the thinking capacities. Nevertheless, she committed a horrendous crime.
Yeah.
Interesting, too, and then I give it back to you. Sorry, I'm getting old, so I need to get my points out, okay?
No problem. Please, I talk all the time. Go ahead. You're here.
So the doctor of the forensic unit who assessed her or testified says that, you know, she feels or thinks that the girl claims, I'm citing here, to see and hear things that others cannot, including unicorns, the Slender Man, and then some person in the Harry Potter series, and she also said that the girl laughed almost hysterically during their session. Now, again, I'm seeing something here that I'm just standing by. As a forensic guy, I have seen a lot of malingering. That means you try to present with symptoms that might not really be there in order to get a secondary gain, and that means, in this case, diminished punishment. As a 12-year-old, she must also be horrified and scared. She's away from her parents. She's kind of, you know, probably living in confinement. And all of a sudden, many of these things, probably she understands them a little better. And it will take years for her, as a matter of fact, to understand fully and comprehend what was going on. But do I think, just from what I read, that she is, like, psychotic or that she's developing childhood schizophrenia? I not necessarily think so. I do think, again, the court is an adversarial system. People present the best defense they can, interesting for themselves. Interesting enough, the other girl did not try to plead incompetence or maybe other things. She actually stated that, no, I held her down, and then we even told her to lay down, the victim, and keep laying down because we didn't want her to draw attention. We wanted her to die. So I do think that both are in the same boat. One is just trying to take another avenue out. What is surprising to me in this case is another thing, that these two girls kind of planned that together. But I remember when I was 12, 13, 14, or even younger, when one of my friends wanted to do something or run away from home, etc., ultimately when we were very close, but one of us would always tell the parents. So the interesting piece is here that these two girls really kept that secret and obviously didn't share very much with their parents. And this is kind of the interesting piece here with me. Normally one person spills the beans. None in this case.
Very interesting. Yeah, they did. And they did have, you're right, they had an elaborate plot. They did plot it out. So there's obviously some thought process there and some intelligence there. But still, you know, to me it bothers me. It's a horrible thing, and there has to be some consequence, but the idea of just throwing them in jail or prison forever at 12 without having the possibility of any redemption or healing is questionable. And then you're saying, well, is it mental illness or is it just pure evil? I mean, where does this come from? As you said, most kids, thankfully, thank God, do not, with undeveloped cortexes, do not don't go out and commit horrible crimes. I mean, that's true. But it's, you know, yeah, it's hard to know where your sympathy should go, but I just think trying them as adults is probably not the answer. But that's a whole other justice system kind of question, too. That
harsh. It's very harsh. Yes, it's very harsh, for sure.
It's very harsh. While we're on the subject, before we let you go, of competence, I don't know if you heard, but Jodi Arias is back in the news. She is now going to act as her own defense attorney in her upcoming death penalty hearing. The judge allowed her to do it, but said, I think it's a bad idea and you should reconsider. So
I think it will be good. It will be hilarious. And I'm no disrespect to Jodi Arias. I think she has been put through the ringer, and I know it means the crime is horrendous. I'm so sorry for the loss that, you know, the world and the family of the victim actually really occurred. But it will be very interesting. Well, at least we don't have to bear two new lawyers. We will just have to hear what she has to say, and hopefully that all goes over with very quickly. Okay?
Yeah,
that's the thing. We just want her off the stage, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the thing is that that's the fault of the state of Arizona, just the fact that they have this crazy second bite of the apple, so to speak. I mean, they really should have just had, like most states have, that if you can't come to an agreement, it's automatically life in prison and be done with it, because that's what I think is going to ultimately happen. But there's more expense for the taxpayers of Arizona. And as you said, one of your opening comments, this is America, and we have a justice system, and people have their right to due process. So she can do it, but she's, I guess, getting used to the idea. Maybe this is her final stab at notoriety, because she'll be in the center stage again, although they're not going to have cameras, I don't think, in the courtroom this time, which is something she fought against, and which I'm surprised, because she loved those cameras in the first time around. But we'll see how that one plays out. Supposedly it's going to happen in September. Believe it when we see it, as I say, or don't see it.
I think many people look forward to it, and I think the case had so much notoriety, and it's so polarized, because there are still people on Twitter now calling for her death, right? And I always said that before. I'm Catholic, I always say that, and I'm against the death penalty, and that's just by principle, if it is Jodi Arias or somebody else. I also think
I'm
in her case,
too.
Yeah, Yeah, and in her case, I think it is very difficult. I mean, I worked in jail, and every day, jail, not prison, every day I went home, I was just so thankful that I could leave the building.
Right.
So I think it is very tragic. Whatever crimes people have committed, you're staying there, you're losing freedom, and maybe you shouldn't have it. But the fact is, thinking of a life where you're incarcerated for the rest of your natural life, or at least until you're quite old, you know, that's not fun or anything to look forward to. And at the beginning, I really thought, well, it's very interesting how she phrased it first. Maybe she would rather want, people say that I rather want death. But I do think that we all cling to life at the end of the day. And if we are presented with the choice, at least I would always choose life, even if incarcerated.
Yeah. Well, she obviously did choose that in her, you know, efforts in the end to save herself. So we'll see how that one plays out. Dr. Danielle, I know we're running late here, but always a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate your insights and analysis. I know our listeners do as well. Thank you so much. I hope you come back soon, and I hope you get a little summer vacation in the meantime.
Yes, and you too, Amy. I love to be on with you. Take good care now. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And by the way, you can contact Dr. Daniela via Twitter at Dr. Daniela or find out more at her website, drdaniela.com. Thanks again. It is the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Reach out via Twitter at AB Writes or on the phone, 347-857-4505. Show. We're holding our heads up on a muggy, at least in the Northeast, Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And thanks again to Dr. Daniela Schreier for joining us. Always appreciate her insights. Couldn't get to all the questions. I know there are others, but, you know, we can't keep this poor woman on the entire day. But we will get her back, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future. Thank you so much for your tweets and your emails over the weekend. Want to reach out to us via Twitter at AB Writes or on the phone line, 347-857-4505. And Johnny says, interesting interview. Don't agree with her about the police. They were totally out of line. Right, we're back to the Garner case, which is really a volatile one in the New York City area for sure and has gotten some national attention, too, due to that video. Let's just see how it plays out. I tend to agree that it was an egregious overreach of power, abuse of power, but we'll see. We're going to have to see how it goes and how it plays out. The mayor of the city of New York, Bill de Blasio, and the police commissioner, Bill Bratton, have vowed to reevaluate police training and community policing in particular. I guess what makes it so tragic, I mean, as I said, regardless of what the suspect did or was alleged to have done, even if it was a more heinous crime, it would have been the wrong thing to do because the chokeholds are illegal. It's simple as that. But for someone to be killed, involved in something like that in such a horrible way for a minor offense, and yeah, he may have been a repeat offender, and I'm sure they're building all this case up against him. And the PBA, I think, was a very disingenuous statement they came out with, which said the fact that this guy who took the video was arrested, cast a cloud over the whole case. I kind of disagree with that, unless the guy was playing with the video, which I don't think he did or is accused of doing. So whether or not it was a trumped-up gun charge or the guy really is a criminal and a stupid one because his wife, I believe, or his mother, somebody came out and said that the police were following him around and the cars were parked outside their house. So if you know the police are following you around waiting for you to do something bad, then maybe you don't do something bad in the interim. But we'll see. Again, that's a separate case and how that all plays out. But it's another volatile summer in the city, if you know what I mean. tough stuff. It really is. And I do agree, and Dr. Daniela is right on this one, that the police do a very tough job, and most of them do a good job, and that's the point. You don't hear about the good ones. We do hear when they fall, when there's a police shooting, when a police person is killed, you do hear about that. But you don't hear when they do the right thing, when they intervene, when they defuse situations, which they are trained to do, and most of them, by and large, do it. You do hear about the apparitions, and unfortunately, you have to hear about the apparitions because we have to hold these people accountable. And if they need retraining, if they need evaluations, and sometimes they just need to be kicked off the job. I mean, they're bad apples in every profession. Unfortunately, this is a very high-stress profession, and it's one with a high burnout, I'm sure, just like teachers. There's some big controversy over teacher tenure now. And there are teachers who really need to be out of the profession at this point, and there are some that are very gifted and are gifted for very long careers. So it's not a wide net of aspersions on anybody or any profession. There are bad apples in every bunch. I don't need to tell you about the bad apples that are in the radio bunch because you can hear those people on a daily basis. So, but it's a tough one, and this unfortunately will be a case that, you know, it's going to be under a lot of scrutiny, and it will play out, and sometimes the activists on both sides, you know, fan the flame, so to speak, and that's not always a good thing. Anyway, we'll see what happens, but we do appreciate Dr. Daniela's insights, and I appreciate you on the line, too. A couple of programming notes coming up on Friday. We will meet author Catherine Lippa. She has written this fascinating memoir called Hiding in Water, a memoir based mostly in reality, so we'll talk about perceptions and reality and her unique childhood. Her father thought he was, or at least asserted that he was a prophet from another planet. So you can imagine the intriguing childhood that was. We'll talk to her about that and the writing process, creative inspiration, the publishing business, etc. That's all coming up. We'll also remember the 40th anniversary of Richard Nixon's resignation. Just saw part of the HBO special they put on last night, and I'm sure you can catch it if you get the premium channel. They replay these things endlessly, or wait for it to get on video. Called Nixon in His Own Words. It was the tapes that he taped. And this is something, and we should have mentioned this with Dr. Daniela, because what a show you could do with just analyzing Richard Nixon. You talk about hubris, you talk about arrogance. The man taped everything, and if he hadn't taped all these conversations with so many things, not just Watergate, but many of the disparaging things he said about blacks and Jews and gays and who knows who else, Henry Kissinger. I mean, there's a lot of different things he said about people would not have been on display, been preserved for posterity, but he did it because of that hubris, that notion of just taping everything. I think it was Johnson who started taping all the conversations in the White House, but you certainly, it's not required of presidents. It's up to them to decide or not. And I guess once you set yourself up for taping and you just forget it's on, I guess. I don't know. Interesting phenomenon, but it was a fascinating story. We'll talk a little bit more and remember with some audio on Friday's show. So that's coming up. Coming up in the fall, when we join you in September, we're going to be going to a new schedule. We'll be doing Tuesdays and Fridays at noon and, of course, other shows as needed. And we have a great fall lineup with you, some great authors and filmmakers, musicians, great storytellers, and you might be one of them. We're always looking for intriguing guests, so hop over to the website, amybetharkawi.com. Tell us about your story, your life, and we'll see about getting you on the show. Media Bites has dubbed a top professional podcast, calling it an empowering and entertaining tour de force, and we thank you for that. Also, thanks to our friends at ArtsWire for singling out some of our shows as their top picks of the week and month, including our interview with author Kevin Scott Hall, just named a top pick of July. So thank you so much at ArtsWire. Always appreciate the recognition, and we thank you so much for that. And thank you, Ed Sayers, for checking in. It's always great to listen to Daniela and Amy Beth. Indeed, happy to have you aboard. It's always a pleasure. It really is a pleasure to have Dr. Daniela. She has a very unique and insightful perspective on so many topics. It's fun to spar with her and have fun with her on the show and with you. And thank you, Alicia, who also said, yeah, really enjoyed Dr. Daniela's visit. Good insights. Thank you, Alicia. And Johnny Fever sang over another great show, AB. Are you doing music? Yeah, we're going to do a few songs. We have some leftovers from our name game show. Thank you so much. What a fun thing that was. First, let's do a little free-flow pop culture convo. Interesting that Scrabble has released, they're adding 5,000 new words. Wow. Now, I'm wondering if how this is going to affect my Words with Friends. It's a separate thing, so I'm not sure if Words with Friends will comply. But they've added some new words to the official Scrabble Players Dictionary. It's coming out August 11th from Merriam-Webster. The last freshening that it had was a decade ago, so it's time. Entries in the forthcoming book that include words like texter, vlog, bromance, hashtag, dubstep, and selfie It's pretty interesting. But it's the addition of T, T-E, and three other two-letter words, Da, G, G-I, and Po, P-O, that has Robin Pollack Daniel excited. Daniel's a clinical psychologist in Toronto, and she's a champion of the North American Scrabble Players Association, which has a committee that helps Merriam-Webster track down new playable words of 2 to 8 letters. Being able to hook an E underneath T means that I can play far more words, so said Daniel, who practices Scrabble 2 to 4 hours a day. Wow. Sometimes you play parallel to a word and you're making two-letter words along the way. I call those the amino acids of Scrabble. Amino acids of Scrabble. The more two-letter words we have, the more possibilities a word will fit. Interesting. And one man's T is another man's K-Jack. It's Q-A-J-A-Q, one of Peter Skoloski's favorites among the new words. He's a lexicographer and editor-at-large for the Springfield, Massachusetts-based company, Merriam-Webster. Kajak, he said in a recent interview with Daniel, reflects the Inuit roots of kayak and would require a blank tile since Scrabble only includes one Q. So there you have it. So some people are much more hardcore than I am, but I'm still wondering if this will affect Words with Friends, because you know how I love Words with Friends. And Nancy Lombardo checking in, no chat room at Blog Talk. Well, no, I haven't used the chat room yet. We use Twitter. That's what we do. We usually use Twitter. But we'll work on it. Maybe we'll try the chat room in a coming episode or two. That's how we roll. You can only look at so many things. We got Twitter, we got Facebook. And I did sneak in, I think, on Nancy Lombardo, who has a Blog Talk show, too. She's a comedian. Sneak in on her chat room at one point just to see how it was done in another Artsy's Diner. They have a chat room, and I kind of trolled around to see how that works. I'm not sure. I think you have to be within the Blog Talk community for that to work. I may be wrong. Twitter, I think, sort of opens it up to people who might not be registered with Blog Talk because we just sort of open it up to other folks. We have people listen via PopNet, iTunes, etc. So there we go. And lots of folks, of course, who listen on podcasts. Don't forget, you can always follow the show at the Blog Talk Radio site. All the shows are archived for podcast. Download them there or at iTunes, NetNow, and, of course, at the website, amybetsarkley.com. That's also the place for the Inspiration to Action Challenge. Shout-outs today going out to Dominic, who is working on a screenplay, he says. He says, speaking of bromance, it's a bromance between based on my relationship with an old friend from high school who I just got back together with and our road trip. All right, interesting. Road trips are popular. It's kind of the... It's kind of a requisite for the romance movies, I guess. So good luck to you, Dominic. And he says, the challenge helped me get back into the spirit of things and put me on a schedule. Or I put myself on a schedule, but you helped me do it. Way to go, Dominic. I appreciate it. If you'd like a shout-out, by all means, reach out. Tell us how the Inspiration Action Challenge has worked for you. It not only gives you a pat on the back, but I think helps spur other folks on to the whole deal. And on the other end of the spectrum, if you need a little cajoling, a little coaxing, want to get into the groove for the new year, it's not the new year. I always think fall as going back to school, even though I'm 107 and I haven't been in school in years, but I do teach writing classes and we start over again usually in the fall. We will help you do that. It's a good time to think about beginning again in September. So reach out via the website, amybetharkwee.com, and we will help you out. While you're at the website, hey, why not take a look at my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mystery Series, both Killing Time and Dead Silent, are available for ebook and paperback, and folks tell me make fabulous beach reads. So if you're headed to the beach or vacation the rest of the season, grab one or two of those books, and I hope you'll get hooked on the series. I'm working loosely on book number 2. So speaking of words, rock and roll was a phrase that was coined by legendary DJ Alan Freed back in the day. But now Alan Freed is getting kicked out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How is that possible? Well, wait a minute. He's not completely getting kicked out. See how these headlines are deceiving. His ashes are getting kicked out. Apparently his ashes are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. His son Lance Freed told the Cleveland Plain Dealer he's not happy about it. He picked up the ashes on Monday, yesterday, told the paper that the hall's president, Greg Harris, told him that people walk past the exhibit and your dad's ashes and they scratch their heads and can't figure out what the thing is. So basically, we'd like you to come up and pick up the ashes, that's what Harris told the Plain Dealer, that only the ashes are being removed, not the other Freed artifacts. that the plan was to return the ashes to the family all along, and that the display where the ashes have been residing will include a pair of Fried's microphones. But Lance Fried told the paper that the move is, quote, pushing his father to the side. It's making him part of the passing parade rather than a place where people can say, hey, this is the guy who helped start it all. Interesting. What do you think about that?
Hello, everybody. Hi, all. This is Alan Freed, the old king of the Moondoggers, and a hearty welcome to all our thousands of friends in northern Ohio, Ontario, Canada, western New York, western Pennsylvania, west Virginia. Along about 11:30, 15 minutes from now, we'll be joining the Moondog Network. Joining all us folks around the Cleveland area here will be thousands of listeners over in New York City and New Jersey who listen to us over in Newark, New Jersey station every night. Good old Aaron Brew, Formula 1002, Northern Ohio's largest selling beer. Make it possible for us to be with you a whole extra half hour on Saturday nights. We'll be here till 2:30 in the morning, and Operator 210 is at the WJW switchboard to take your telephone request. When you're calling in, play it cool when you call. We'll get to your request as soon as we can. Pop the cap. Have a good ball wherever you are. Enjoy Aaron Brew 1002 and the Moondog Show.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance. No kicks against modern jazz, unless they try to play it too darn fast and change the beauty of the melody until it sounds just like a symphony. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Took my loved one over across the track so she could hear my man a wailing sack. I must admit they have a rocking band. Man, they was blowing like a hurricane. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. They gave a jubilee. I tell you folks, they had a jamboree and drinking beer from a wooden cup. The folks are dancing, got all shook up. They started playing that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it.
We leave tonight, we'd like to say a special thanks. We don't have much time to thank everybody, and especially to our friends in the music business and to our wonderful friends here and all of you out there for your great loyalty. This is not goodbye, it's just good night, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Legendary DJ Alan Freed on the Moondog Network. Show. He, of course, got caught up in that payola scandal back in 1960 and said goodbye and never really did reclaim his early greatness, but he's still immortalized as the founder of rock and roll, coining the phrase anyway, and is immortalized in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with a big exhibit, but his ashes have been evicted and his son is miffed. So there you go. Can't please everybody. Immortalized. And yeah, that was a big deal, that payola scandal. There was a great movie Joe Esterhaus wrote the script to. I can't think of it. Was something about, was it Living and Dying in Cleveland? I forget now. Gosh, Lies in Cleveland? Something like that. I forget the name of the title now, but it was really based on Alan Freed. I guess he knew Alan Freed as a kid. He shadowed him around, and it was based on a disc jockey, obviously, they fictionalized it, of The Pale Scandal. Very interesting. I've got to look at the title of that movie. It just escapes me now. But a fascinating film, indeed. I'll check on that. Trudy, you want to look for that? We'll see what we can do. It is the end of the Berkeley Show. Reach out via Twitter. A little time left here at AB Rights. Or call us live on the studio line if you're listening on Tuesday, August 5th, 347-857-4505. Is it muggy where you are? Because it's getting kind of uncomfortable in this. The sound and the noise.
The traffic from the road, kids playing hide and seek. You bet that I'm aware. Each time those children screech, rowdy yards, louder streets, the never-ending drone. I'm stuck inside my house with all my windows closed up. I can hear you. People running in the storm. You got the stereo blasting and subwoofers on, baby. And I can't tell you how loud it is from the field on. I wish all this noise of summer was gone. Out on my deck today, I heard a muffler blown on a Cadillac. Then the neighbor comes out, got the weed. Going whack, whack, whack. I thought I knew what loud was. How could I know? That jerk who moved behind me. Wait till sun stands to mow it. I can hear them. The mopeds constantly run. There's a holly revving up. Just for the fun, baby. And I can't tell you how loud it is. From some field on. I wish all this noise of summer was gone. And I can't hear you. People running in the sun. You got the stereo blasting and subwoofers on, baby. And I can't tell you how loud it is. From some field on. I wish all this noise of summer was gone.
Oh, so hot, so sticky.
It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight. Refill the cup with my baby tonight. But I ain't up to my baby tonight, cause it's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to cool with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight and pitch the woo with my baby tonight. But brother, you fight my baby tonight, cause it's too darn hot. According to the Kinsey Report, every average man you know much prefers his lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Pants, for romance is not, cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too, too darn hot.
my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. I like to coo with my baby tonight. And pitch the woo with my baby tonight. But brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn high. According to the Kinsey Report, every average man you know much prefers his lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Gobb for his squad, a Marine for his queen, a G.I. for his cutie pie is not, 'cause it's too darn hot. 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 It's too.
I'm Amy Bethurkowicz, putting her signature on the Cole Porter Classic. It's too darn hot. And, of course, the TCS crew and their parody, they dig up the noise of summer. Getting ready. A lot of parents are getting ready for those kids to go back to school. In fact, the commercials were running after the 4th of July for the back-to-school clothes. Still got another 4 or 5 weeks left, kids, so enjoy it while you can. Hey, we're going to enjoy a couple of our leftovers from the name game special. You've been waiting over a week for this one. It's, not quite a week, I guess, but almost a week. It's for Dondi. It's Elvis Costello and Veronica on the Amy Beth Arkowicz Show.
Is it all in that pretty little head of yours? What goes on in that place in the dark? Well, I used to know a girl and I could have sworn that her name was Veronica. Well, she used to have a carefree mind of her own and a delicate look in her eyes. These days I'm afraid she's not even sure.
have no rules. No rules whatsoever.
Counting Crows certainly are big stars on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show for Oliver, left over from our name game show. And speaking of Counting Crows, a new album coming out soon. Looking forward to that. Always a pleasure to hear from Adam Duritz and the guys. Not sure what Adam does with his hair, though, in the summer. It must be awfully hot. But I think about baseball players. When you see them, some of these guys have a lot of crazy hair and beards. You're like, aren't you hot? The Mets certainly aren't hot, that's for sure. They just dropped 3 out of 4 to the Giants, and they were doing so well, too. I mean, I don't get them. It's so hard being a Mets fan. It's do or die, I think. They're taking on the Nationals starting today for 3 games, and they got to win at least 2 out of 3, preferably sweep them to get back in this thing, or I think it may be over. It is so hard being a Mets fan, but you just, like the Brokeback Mountain quote, I just can't quit them. I wish I could sometimes, but I just can't. Hey, thanks for reaching out on the Twitter feed. Shay says, really enjoyed the show. Great interview. I like the songs, too. Thank you, Shay. Johnny Fever's Hangover. He's a hearty irregular. He says, missed part of the interview, but I'll catch it on podcast. Digging the tunes, AB, as usual. Thank you, Johnny Fever. And Nelly, I think, says, I thought you were going to talk about Hot Car Dad. Yeah, we were going to talk about Justin Ross Harris. Didn't have time. That case is still pending. A lot of people are still pretty obsessed with that one because a lot of kids, I think 17 kids since this case broke across the country have died in hot cars. It's crazy, and you hear these stories all the time. Sometimes, fortunately, they don't die. Thank God somebody rescues them. But why are people leaving their babies and their little children in hot cars? I don't get it. You can't leave a baby in a car anyway. It's not a good idea. So certainly not when it's hot. It's crazy. We'll talk more. I'm sure we'll have Dr. Daniel on again. So many cases to talk about, and we never have enough time for sure. But we always appreciate her. Please reach out to her directly at Twitter, at Dr. Daniela, or, of course, find out more at her website, drdaniela.com. So a few more minutes left. We'll squeeze in another song or two. This one for Bridget. Oh, talk about early, very early, Bare Naked Ladies. Be My Yoko Ono on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Love this one.
And if there's someone you can't live without, then do so. And if there's someone you can just shove out, well, do so. You can be my Yoko Ono. You can follow me wherever I go. Be my Yoko Ono. Isn't it beautiful to see two people so much in love? Bare naked as two virgins hand in hand and hand in glove. But now that I'm far away, it doesn't seem to me to be such a pain to have you hanging off my ankle like some kind of ball and chain. You can be my Yoko Ono. You can follow me wherever I go. Be my Yoko Ono.
Be my Yoko. Oh no, here we go, our life's one big fun.
Oh no, here we go, it's Yoko sing one. I know that when I say this, I may be stepping on pins and needles. But I don't like all these people flagging her for breaking up the Beatles. Don't blame it on Yoki. Even if I was John and you were Yoko, I would gladly give up music genius just to have you as my very own personal Venus. You can be my Yoko Ono. You can follow me wherever I go. Be my Yoko Ono. Be my Yoko Ono. Be my Yoko Ono. Be my Yoko Ono. Whoa.
Guys want to be him, girls think they can change him.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it all about when you started out, Alfie? Are we meant to become?
Kurt Bacharach, Hal David's muse, Dionne Warwick, and the theme from Alfie for Dorothy on the Amy Beth Berkowitz Show, the theme from the original with Michael Caine, which I think was far superior to the Jude Law remake. Just my opinion, anyway. Busy Twitter feed. Hey, thanks so much for checking in, folks. Shay said, great show. Rico said, missed part of the interview. We'll catch it on podcast. Indeed. Don't forget to do that at the Blog Talk Radio site. You can follow the Amy Beth Berkowitz Show and download episodes there. All archived for podcast, also available at iTunes, NetNow, and the website, amybetharkaway.com. So thanks again to Dr. Daniela, and thank you for joining us. Thanks to the gang at TCS, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at TCS headquarters. Friday, it's Catherine Limpa. Please join us for that. Friend me on Facebook, and the conversation is 24/7. Follow us on Twitter at AB Writes. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. We'll leave you with another one from the movies for Phyllis. It's Kim Carnes, Betty Davis' eyes. Come back and see us on the Amy Beth Berkowitz Show. Take care.
Her hair is hollow gold, her lips sweet surprise. Her hands are never cold, she's got Betty Davis' eyes. Have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis eyes. And she'll tease you, she'll unease you, all the better just to please you. She's so cautious, and she knows just what it takes to make. Take her home with her appetite. She'll lay you on the throne. She got Betty Davis eyes. She'll take a tumble on you, roll you like you were dice, until you come out blue. She's got Betty Davis eyes. You when she snows you off your feet with the crumbs she throws you. She's ferocious and she knows.